Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning, friends and listening family. Nice to have you with us this morning. It is Thursday, and my heart is heavy this morning, like many in this city of Minneapolis-St. Paul, as well as around the country. National news last night, if you caught the story of the school, a natural gas explosion at Minnehaha Academy in Minneapolis on Wednesday, collapsed part of a building. It killed two people and hospitalized nine, and the explosion was caused by contractors doing some work on the building. One of the people that died was a young woman who is just getting married, I think, next month. So very sad. And a custodian who was, I think, an elderly gentleman, but very sad. And I just want to pray for all the families and that school, which is going to be, I don't even know if it's going to be open next year or this fall because of the devastation. I don't know what it'll take, but it does need our prayer. And in Psalm 94:18, it says, "When I said my foot is slipping, your unfailing love, Lord, supported me." So I know that a lot of people might feel that way this morning with their loved ones and their kids. There were kids playing soccer and practicing basketball when the explosion went off. So there were a lot of grateful parents that school wasn't in session and children didn't die. And although there was two losses, and for that, my heart grieves, and I just would ask you at some point today, as you are going about your morning, say a prayer for all the people at Minnehaha Academy, and I know that God will be glorified somehow through all this, because that's what people who follow Jesus seem to do, is they turn it to our Savior. So we have a great show this morning, and I'm going to bring Karen Ellis on. She is always one of my most favorite guests, and she's in England right now. So she's probably had lunch where you order your lunch and then it's served to your table and you go, "Huh, this is lunch?" That's what I'd say anyway. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back with Karen Ellis. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning. I have on the line Karen Ellis. She is from the International Christian Response, and she is currently in England. So, Karen, good morning.
Cheerio.
Yeah, thank you so much. And you're a little bit ahead of
good
us,
morning.
So, yeah.
Just a bit, yeah. I could tell you what's going to happen in the rest of your day. I'm 5 hours ahead.
That's so
no,
so
I don't,
nice.
I don't have that kind of vision.
So, let me ask you, what are you doing in England?
Well, I'm still working on a PhD here at Oxford, and today I'm just going to be sitting in the library reading book after book after book after book. That's sort of my life when I come here for 6 weeks, and then I try and funnel it all into some coherent thoughts and hope the faculty likes it. But I'm actually really excited about my topic. It has to do with the persecuted church, which you know is, you know, where my heart is and my passion is. So it's pleasant reading. It's pleasant thinking. It's
nice.
It's a lot of prayer because I'm looking at some really heavy situations. But I'm hoping that I can produce something at the end of a few years that'll, you know, benefit the church.
Nice. Karen, let me ask you, I know persecuted churches is what you love looking at and studying and doing something about. Maybe we should start our conversation with the increased amount of persecution that's going on in India right now.
It's interesting. I'm not as well versed on India as I am in other areas, but what I do know is that they have a new president. And a lot of very difficult things happened under their former president, Modi. I know a lot of people hoped things would be better for Christians and other religious minorities. It's not just Christians who suffer under a Hindu extremism. Under their new president, President Ram Nath Kovind, some of those hopes have been called into question, I guess is a good way to put it. under President Modi, we saw the shuttering of hundreds of foreign charities that were designed to help and empower India's less fortunate people. But it seems that with the new one, we have to watch very closely in the months to come. In spite of being from the Dalit caste himself, President Ram Nath Kovind is he seems to have no place for Christianity in his vision for India. And that's despite being from a historically oppressed people himself. He's from the Dalit caste. So it's Kate Shelnut, I don't know if you know her from Christianity Today. She wrote an excellent piece on the new president's vision and how it excludes Christianity that I highly recommend. If you want to check it out, you can just go to CT and just look up Kate Shelnut, India, and the article will come up. It's the most recent one she did. They're number 15 on the Open Doors watch list due to Hindu extremism. And I think probably in the next few months to years, advocates will be watching very closely to see if his promotion to president will, you know, sort of empower Hindu nationalist extremists and their abuses as a result of his position. And we're also going to, of course, watch how Indian Christians will creatively persevere and continue to advocate on their behalf.
Mm-hmm. Karen, what persecuted church is breaking your heart now more than ever?
That is a really hard question. You know, I tell people a lot that I would love to be put out of business and not have to do this anymore and go and open a catering business somewhere, just do something else. But, the Lord said that, you know, we were always going to have trouble. It's hard to choose one that breaks your heart. They all break your heart in different ways, mm-hmm. I think is probably one way to put it. But they also inspire your heart in different ways. And so one of the ones that's probably most on my heart is Iran. It's one of the populations that I'm studying. The cost of discipleship is astronomically high there. And yet the church is so alive and it's so vibrant. It's a fascinating juxtaposition. And I think the one thing I admire most about Iranian Christians is how they use their spiritual tools. A lot of times we take our spiritual tools that the Lord has given us for granted, like fasting and prayer.
Mm-hmm.
They're two weapons God has placed in our hands that no man can take from you. You can never be disarmed from fasting and prayer because it's your choice to do it.
Right.
And a lot of people in Iran take fasting and prayer very seriously, much more seriously than we do, because their lives depend on it. And it keeps them sharp in all circumstances. It's very easy to be arrested and brought up on charges of acting against national interests. It doesn't take much. There are a lot of kangaroo trials, 10-minute trials with long sentences and quick verdicts. And yet they persevere. I don't know if you've ever talked with a fellow named Dr. Harmal Shariat.
I have not.
Oh my gosh, you need to have him on. He's great. He runs a TV ministry called Iran Alive, and it's essentially church for house churches. He's the president and the presenter. And I've had a chance to interview him with Christianity Today. You can go and just do a search on the page for my name, Ellis, and it'll come up with the other articles. And he's speculating that this generation that's coming up after what we will call our millennials,
mm-hmm. They
are some of the most fearless people. I mean, I'm talking these 19, 20 years old kids. Their bleak economic and cultural reality has created this atmosphere of fearlessness for them, particularly towards the government. They feel like they have nothing to lose and all to gain in Christ. So when they become Christians, oh my gosh, they are all in. And so Dr. Shariat feels that the next wave of Christianity is going to be driven in the entire region by this younger generation in Iran. So you can read some of his thoughts on Iran's potential as a driver of global Christianity and hear about the good work that they're doing at Iran Alive TV as well. So that's one that that pains my heart, but also I get so excited about. Nobody wants to ever be in prison, period. But being in Evin prison is from people I've heard that have been there, it's one of the most bleak places, and also a place where you meet Christ in a real and tangible way. So, yeah, Iran has grabbed my heart in a special way.
Yeah, Karen, I hate to sound so naive. I had no idea it was the church and Christians were so vibrant in Iran.
Yeah.
That shocks me and inspires me. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing. And it's a pattern that we see all over the world. The question is, how do you keep that flame going? I mean, it is possible to completely snuff out a whole population. So, you know, the old expression that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church is true to a certain extent. But there is a tipping point at which a whole population can be wiped out. And a whole human witness of God's, because he always leaves a record of himself everywhere, right? But the whole human, a whole human witness can be wiped out from an entire region. And we've seen that recently in Iraq, and certainly South Sudan is one of those places that's bordering on, you know, what's going to happen with Sudan and South Sudan and the Christian presence there. So, yeah, it's something to watch. It's thrilling, and yet, you know, it's a roller coaster ride of emotion for me. I do a lot of self care. I have to do a lot of self-care because, you know, it's like you're constantly swinging from one pole of excitement to the other pole of, oh, my word, how can people be so cruel? It's not enough just to humiliate someone. It's not enough just to kill them. You have to torture them and abuse them in the worst way possible. And you really see that you see the heights of God's redemptive power in some of these situations and bringing beauty from ashes, and you see the depths of man's depravity. And you know, swinging between those two poles is something else.
Well, Karen, I'm going to take a little break, and when I come back, I do want to continue this conversation. I'm speaking with Karen Ellis from International Christian Response. At 16 minutes after the hour, we'll be right back. Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here talking to Karen Ellis. And Karen is in England right now. Is hubby Carl with you?
Sadly, he is not. He's going to join me at the very end, though. So nice. I'm kind of excited about that.
I bet you are. Okay, let's talk about Sudan and the way that they have now ordered Christian schools to get back to work on Sundays, even though they used to have it off.
Right. So Sudan is an area of interest to watch. It's sort of moved from human rights into the political arena because of the human rights abuses. The White House just reluctantly signed a new round of sanctions against Sudan because of its actions against its own people and against South Sudan. And Russia, Iran, and Sudan they're pretty cozy with each other. And a lot of their coziness centers around both nuclear weapons issues and humanitarian issues and religious freedom issues. It's interesting that the bill passed with overwhelming support in the House and the Senate says a lot to the wisdom of keeping the reins tight on all three. There are some serious concerns about Sudan's human rights record. What you're mentioning is just a glimpse into some of the things that that have been going on for a few years now. They've got closed political spaces, restrictions on religious freedom, freedom of expression, and they have restrictions on press freedom as well. Of course, for us as Christians, on the personal note, on the family note, there's also the demolition of churches and the persecution of Christians by Sudanese authorities. People can be expected to be harassed. Arrests have intensified since South Sudan seceded back in 2011. They've even stopped granting new licenses, I guess, it's probably been 5 years now, since 2013, I guess, for building new churches in Sudan itself. They said it was because there was a decrease in the South Sudanese population, but that kind of doesn't make sense in terms of, well, if the population decreases, if you still have a Christian population, you should still have a right to build a church if they want to build a church. They've been expelling foreign Christians. They've bulldozed church buildings on the pretext that they belong to South Sudanese. And of course, all of this has contributed to the refugee crisis that we see flowing into Uganda today. It's up to 1.5 million people and counting. Sudan is a place that we continue to watch for a number of reasons. What you're mentioning about schools ordering them to continue to operate their schools on Sundays, not being able to take the Sabbath is sort of just it's a symptom of a much larger root. We'll have to keep an eye on that. Humanitarian issues aside, you know, when South Sudan seceded, the country was able to establish itself. And I think one of the most difficult things for me when I was there just about a month ago now was the fact that seeing the South Sudanese have such great hopes 5 years ago, five or so years ago, for their having their own country and having those hopes dashed so quickly, I think has been very difficult for a lot of South Sudanese people. Their hopes were so high to be the world's newest country just 5 years ago. So Muslims and Christians, I think alike, are beginning to regroup now wherever they find themselves, if they've stayed, if they've fled, and consider what is next for their lives as these people called South Sudanese. So there are a lot of factors at work there. There's a lot of wisdom among many counselors, and we rarely agree on much across party lines. So the caution, the House and the Senate's caution on the sanctions is definitely worth considering, in spite of the White House's disappointment and reluctance on the issue.
You know, even in Sudan, though, there will be these thugs that will just show up at churches and Christian schools and just start wielding their weapons. It's horrifying.
That's right.
It's just terrifying.
That's right. That's right. If you can imagine that kind of worship scenario.
I can't.
You know, I liken it to, you know, it's not that it's not unsimilar from or dissimilar from, you know, like the on our shores, the Charleston Nine, you know, just somebody showing up at a prayer meeting and just opening fire. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that kind of terror that, you know, the place that's supposed to be the safest place,
right,
the place of sanctuary and the place of rest, is no longer a safe place. And so, you know, you're faced with the question, do I continue to gather? Does the church continue to gather? These are hard questions for leaders. Do you continue to gather in the face of that? How do you honor the Sabbath when your government places restrictions on you? What does it look like? You know, maybe it doesn't always have to look like what it looks like in the West. You have to find other creative and functional ways to honor the word and to still keep the people safe, you know. So there's a lot going on in there to mine.
Yeah, governments come and go, leaders come and go, but Jesus is on the throne forever.
He is indeed.
Yeah.
Say that word, brother.
So let me.
You gonna start preaching now?
Yeah. Only with your permission. All right. I'm gonna drag you back to the United States here for a minute. Kansas Governor Sam Brownback nominated for Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom. You liking that?
I am. You had J.C. Derrick on from World Magazine.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. He's really the expert on Brownback's appointment because he got the interview. So he got it from the horse's mouth.
Okay.
I don't know if there's a whole thing I can say that he didn't already say. Of course, Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom, all of my students on Theology of Human Rights, they know that that's my personal dream role. Advocating for religious freedom at the highest level. I mean, it's a very important office. The Office of International Religious Freedom can be a very effective and even a life-saving tool if it's led properly. Brownback, I think, is seen by most people as a decent choice. As Derek mentioned on your show before, he brings a lot of stature and a lot of experience to the role. He has a decent, more than decent track record of policy and legislation as a senator supporting global religious freedom. And he's been a long time advocate and awareness, doing awareness raising of global issues surrounding religious freedom. So I think with the rise of religious issues and discrimination around the globe, you really need someone in there who understands the issues and someone who won't just advocate for Christians, but also for oppressed religious minorities and those who don't hold to a religion at all, because it's kind of a misnomer that the Ambassador for Religious Freedom, international religious freedom, is just out for Christians. That's not true at all. They're there to make sure that balance is maintained, I think, between religious freedom and human rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we'll watch him carefully. We'll have to see what kinds of decisions he makes and follow his actions beyond his appointment. You know, a lot of people are like, oh boy, you know, Senator Brownback was appointed, and they'll never think about the office of the Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom for the next 4 years again.
Yeah.
it's definitely something to watch, considering that 75% of what the world's Christians live under some sort of religious hostility. 75%.
Wow.
That's 3 in 4.
That's amazing.
3 in 4 in the
That's
world.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And Karen, you referred to your students. Remind me again where you teach so I can sign up for a course.
All right. You should come join us. That would be fantastic. fantastic. You're welcome.
I'd be the dumbest guy in your class for sure.
No. You bring a lot to the conversation. I teach with the Chattanooga Fellows Program, and it is a part of the Fellows Initiative, which is sort of a nationwide fellows program where you take post-college students in between, and they give them theological tools to go into the marketplace. And my husband and I are also beginning an institute that's we call it Makazi Institute. It's a our students refer to us as Black Labrie.
Okay.
Do you know Labrie? Okay, Francis Schaeffer. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
My husband was studied under Schaeffer, and our house sort of turned into a Labrie type situation. So we thought we'd formalize it.
Very cool.
And we're in the process of equipping people for the marketplace, folks who wouldn't normally go to seminary. Giving them a seminary education that they can take into their jobs and
yeah.
their fields.
How creative. Now, we can go look up your information at ellisperspectives.com, E-L-L-I-S, perspectives.com. Karen, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Much appreciate
you. And have a great time studying in England.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Talk to
you
soon.
Yep. 28 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back with more of the Early Morning Late Show.
This is your daily dose of devotion. We buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Good morning. It's 31 minutes after the hour. We're going to go to news. But before we do, here's a news item. In 1971, on this day, Paul McCartney formed a new group called Wings. No offense, Paul, but I was more of a fan of your first band. We'll take a break and be back. More. Just a minute. Good morning, 25 minutes until the top of the hour. One tip for productivity, begin each day focusing on God through prayer. Dr. Linda Mintel tells us more.
I really believe that if you renew your commitment to serve the Lord every single day, I think if you start your day with prayer and you focus on that scripture that says, this is the day that the Lord has made, I will rejoice, I will be glad in it. If you respond to God's love, as you're reading through the Word and you're looking at it and you're reminding yourself how faithful God is, that as you start that centering of the day, and this is what people who have other spiritualities have a sense of, as we do that with the living God, the God who is in us, and we commune with Him in the morning, that is a great way to start with good productivity. It does make a difference, and I have to discipline myself to do it every single day. If we live in these one-day segments of faithful obedience, like today is the day, Lord, I'm going to do the best I can. I want to walk in your calling today. Put before me the things that you want me to do and help me focus on the things you want me to do. I think that's a great way to do that. If you take 15 minutes, a lot of times people don't do it, and I know I was guilty of this because I thought I had to get up at 5 a.m. and I had to spend an hour with the Lord. All I used to do was fall asleep when I did that. Had to keep the time a little bit later and then shorten the time a little bit. But it does help us renew our mind. It helps us be led by the Spirit for the day. Pray, listen to the Lord, and see what the Lord is prompting you to do.
That was Dr. Linda Mintel, and that is a nice little snippet from her interview. And if that's enough for you, way to go. If you want more, go to myfaithradio.com and you can type in the search engine, Dr. Linda Mintel and Highly Habits Productive People, or something like Habits Highly Productive People. You know how that works. Anyway, Dr. Linda Mintel, and we'll take a short break, and when we come back, Kim Cattola is with us.
If you haven't taught your children how to know what they believe and why they believe it, who will? This is Jim Garlow. In public school, your child won't be taught how to pray. The Ten Commandments won't be on the walls. And biblical principles won't be taught. In college, they'll be bombarded with worldviews filled with twisted half-truths intentionally to undermine the Christian worldview. As a Christian and a citizen, we should be working with our elected representatives to reform public education, to encourage alternatives to be created and protected. Religious liberty shouldn't be suffocated because of political correctness. And First Amendment rights shouldn't end the moment a student or a teacher steps onto their school campus. The battle over the education of our children lies with us as parents and grandparents. Take ownership for the teaching of your children. The eternal consequences are real. There's more at jimgarlow.com. Good morning, 20 minutes until the top of the hour. Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio is on our studio line right now. Kim, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How you doing?
I'm good. Nothing like a World Series championship to boost birth rate.
This is a great story, isn't it?
It is.
So, yeah, there was a baby boom in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, exactly 9 months after the Cubs won the World Series for the first time in over 100 years. And this I'm calling this a pro-life story, Bill, because...
As we should. This is happy news.
Because babies, right?
Yes.
So all of these families are in the various Chicago hospitals. And what did the Cubs do? They sent the players out with the trophy and with these prize packages for the Fans for Life Club. Oh. And they gave the babies little onesies, and they gave them, you know, the team mascot was on hand with photos. They gave them a beanie, a special birth certificate. They had a Wrigley Field photo with the baby's name on the marquee. It was really, I think it's lovely. And I think it really shows just the joy that babies bring to everything. You know, our culture has turned motherhood, infancy, babies into something very, very different. And I just think this is a great story that is really heartwarming.
I need to take a 2-second break to wipe the grin off my face right now.
it's a lovely story.
It is so true because it's so pro-life. And what a joy and a celebration. And, you know, they're naming kids after streets around Wrigley Field, and just the whole thing is just a celebration. It's really quite cute, quite amazing.
Well, and there's a great story at mychamplainvalley.com. I'm surprised this didn't get a lot more, you know, major attention, but if you go to mychamplainvalley.com, you see the dads with the babies huddled around the trophy, and it's just pure joy on their faces. It's a really fun story.
All right, let's talk about Senator John McCain. I will do this with a grain of salt only because I think that he might have pulled a Scooby-Doo, you know, where you rip off the mask and go, hey, I really am a Democrat.
You know, how to understand what happened here as he cast the deciding vote that killed the skinny repeal of Obamacare.
Yeah.
So he comes back from cancer surgery, and it's a very dramatic thing. And he sides with these two female legislators, and there it is. It's done. As to why, he said it's a procedural thing. He said, we've got to get back to process. We've got to take it to the governors. We've got to take our time. We've got to craft legislation. We can't just do this in a slapdash fashion. But there's a lot of speculation out there, Bill, that this was payback. You know, that when candidate Trump said that he wasn't a war hero, it was on.
Yeah.
I mean, McCain had provoked the bear by saying, you know, that candidate Trump was bringing out the crazies.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but he also, back earlier this year, he also sided with a couple of the more moderate, more some may say more liberal Republican senators on an energy matter. So this should not be entirely surprising to everybody, but the fallout is still sort of, the dust is still settling as to whether or not the Republicans can get their act together and get anything done on this, and whether or not they'll follow his advice that they do the lugubrious process of sending this thing through.
There is the word of the day, lugubrious. You get that, Rebecca? Good. Let's talk about how that would be killing the Planned Parenthood defunding, though. That's really, too, something that's critical to this whole discussion.
You really wonder. You really wonder. I mean, one of the things that has happened is that Democrats are getting the message, and some are saying in the Democrat Party, okay, pro-life can no longer be a litmus test for our candidates,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to run some pro-life candidates, pro-life Democrats. Of course, there's a huge pushback with NARAL and
Amanda Marcotte and all the liberal voices that, you know, sound the alarm. And some have even proposed, women need their own party. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Because the majority of women are pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
But, so when we stop and kind of let the dust settle on this, we see that we've got to find a way to work on it so that the will of the American people can be expressed in our laws. You know, most Americans don't want our tax dollars funding abortion. And Planned Parenthood being the largest provider of abortions, they have cozied up to candidates with their campaign dollars and positioned themselves as some sort of unique health care provider when they are not. They only do one third of the abortion procedures, for that matter, that happen in the United States. Most are done at standalone facilities. Many are done now outside of facilities through chemical or medical abortions, where women take pills at home. They're not essential health care, Bill. And, you know, the fact that this would become the political football that it has become, I really hope that the Republican Party can get its act together and get a resolution on this in line with the majority of the desires of the American people.
Yeah, exactly. Kim, we'll take a little break. And when I come back, I do want to ask you about Charlie Gard. That little guy is gone. And artificial wombs. What an interesting concept. I'm talking to Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio. We'll be back in just a minute. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. It's 13 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio, which airs on the Faith Radio Network Sunday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. Kim, little Charlie Gard is gone, and it seems people are pretty passionate about having the parents, not the hospitals, have directives on their children.
One of the interesting things to emerge, and may he rest in peace, Charlie Gard would have been 1 year old tomorrow. Tomorrow would have been his first birthday.
Oh, boy.
But he died last week at the court's orders. And yes, he had a mitochondrial condition that often takes the lives of children early. But the fact that treatment was withheld from him over politics, really, Bill, this was a worldview issue and a political issue. And it's surprising to me, and it shouldn't be, but his court-appointed attorney was a euthanasia activist. That's one of the details to emerge, you know, as the parents have protested, even in his death, that their hands were tied and that his death was perhaps not necessary, at least at this time. One of the things that I am very comforted by, though, is that he did have benefit of clergy and his parents had benefit of clergy. We know, Bill, from our pro-life theology that when children die before they can make a profession, a profession of faith, we know that Christ receives them back to himself from the scriptures when Jesus said, let the little children come to me. But it's such a comfort for parents and for those of us who remain when that child has been baptized. And Charlie was baptized. But this was part of the political wrangling as well. At first, the hospital wasn't going to allow the Presbyterian pastor to come in and pray with the parents and pray over Charlie. Eventually that did happen, but it shows you the stark contrast between those who believe that God is good and that God is sovereign and that every life has value and those who don't and who think that the state has to be the best judge of when a life has meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the big takeaway for me, Bill, from Charlie's life, which had intrinsic value, whether or not anyone ever derives a lesson from it. But one of the best lessons that we can take is that he is a perfect mirror, as are all disabled people. They are perfect mirrors into our hearts and souls. What do we make of them? Can we love them unconditionally? Can we accept them? Can we set aside our fears of our own imperfections being reflected there and simply say, you exist because God made you, therefore I love you? You know, and I think this case really, it's such a challenge to us. And I hope that each one of us doesn't waste the opportunity to reflect on where we stand and really if we get the chance to speak up.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to move on to this. This I found interesting, Kim, that there are the Democrats now are trying to buoy up a pro-life candidate to try to recapture Congress. You know, if you look across the American voters, 40% of Democrats believe that abortion is morally wrong. So I think the leadership says, ooh, we better find someone that believes in pro-life.
You know, I'm telling you, Bill, feminists who are honest will tell you that abortion is bullying. They wouldn't use that word, but Camille Paglia, among others, have said, yes, it's the oppression of the weak by the strong.
Mm-hmm.
And she went so far as to say it's killing, you know, because they can. This is what women have secured in securing that right, that constitutional right to abortion. And they are bullying those Democrats in the party who mm-hmm. say, wait a minute, abortion isn't right. And as you say, Bill, we heard it during the presidential cycle that at least 40% of Democrats are not in favor of abortion on demand. Their voices are growing louder. Kristen Day, Charlie Camozzi, and others have said, we've got to stop making this a black and white issue because it isn't. Most people have a very nuanced view about this and they want their party to reflect that. But wow, you know, when the proposals are out there, as I said, the pushback has been huge. But we'll see. You know, it was first floated when there was a Democrat running for mayor of Omaha who was pro-life and the party endorsed him. And a lot of people said, no, 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 he doesn't pass the litmus test. But Democrats have now said formally they're not going to withhold the party support for candidates who oppose abortion rights. And that made big news this last week. Representative Ben Ray Lujan of New Mexico said no litmus test. And you know, as I said, the feminist activists who are abortion rights advocates came out in force to decry it. But Democrats are unlikely to win the 24 seats they need to recapture control if they don't contest more conservative districts. And the way to do this is to, again, find out what their voters are looking for. And extreme abortion rights is not what the vast majority of American citizens support.
Mm-hmm. Kim, let me ask you about artificial wombs. Oh, my goodness. What is that?
Well, you know, artificial wombs are a thing, Bill.
I know so little.
Well, they
I'm a humble
are
man
thing.
That knows little.
So, yeah, bio bags. After spending 4 weeks in bio bags, lambs showed development similar to that of those who were growing in utero.
Okay.
Yep. So technology looks pretty promising right now. That artificial wombs could make women obsolete. You know, Planned Parenthood, by the way, this is a side note, but Planned Parenthood, by the way, is now becoming very vocal about stripping, you know, womanhood from motherhood and lobbying for new pronouns because transgendered men can have babies too, Bill.
That's true.
On the face of it, it's a little confusing. Like, wait, back up. What if she and he? Anyway,
yeah, that's what they say.
Back in April, researchers published the results of their research, and Gizmodo ran a piece raving about the potential. But abortion rights activists, Bill, saw that. There goes our big argument, which is bodily integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And so they say, you know, that a woman has a right to do whatever she wants to with the contents of her uterus because it's happening within her body. Her bodily integrity demands that she maintain a right to abort. And so Gizmodo was very upset about artificial wombs because they said it could destroy the fragile right that a woman has to abortion. So they would be opposed to the creation of new life because, oh, wait a minute, if life can be born without a body, there goes their argument.
Mm-hmm.
Bio bags.
Wow.
Could destroy really the last stand that many feminists take about bodily integrity. Of course, that argument is nonsense because it denies the body of the baby. Bodies begin with the, you know, with the zygote,
mm-hmm.
which embryology teaches us it is a distinct living whole human being from conception forward. That's a body. Doesn't look like a more mature body, but it's a body. That's what an organism, which is a new living entity, that's what that looks like. That is a body, and abortion destroys the body. So the artificial womb ethic is, you know, that's happening as fast as all of the transgender developments. And it's very hard to stay on top of it and to stay in front of it and to ask ourselves how we ought to feel about that. Mm. But when we come back to the truth, as you know, that we are made in God's image and that we're fully human from conception forward, then we understand that it's morally wrong to kill an innocent human being. And artificial wombs pose some ethical problems with bioethics, you know, whether or not we ought to be creating human life, even if we have that capability beyond the animal research that's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the feminists' pushback is a really interesting development.
Amazing. Kim, thank you so much for being on the program. Look forward to speaking to you every Thursday. Have a great
week. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, have a great week.
You too.
Yep. It's 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be back in just a minute.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on.
It is a couple minutes until the top of the hour. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to have Dr. Russ Berg. He's been married to his high school sweetie for 41 years. And we're going to talk about being a first responder to marriages that are in trouble. Maybe your marriage is in trouble, or maybe you have a friend who's got a marriage in trouble. And the question might be, how can I best support and love them? If you have a question for how to be a first responder, you're going to want to get that phone ready, because he'll be with us to have a conversation with and also to answer your questions. And then we're going to have Dr. Paul Kengor coming up in the latter part of the next hour. We'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.